This morning, we are remembering the life of an actress whose most famous role was as a survivor. Gloria Stewart played Old Rose in the movie Titanic. At age 87, she became the oldest woman ever nominated for an Oscar. She once told NPR about the first time she saw the script.
So I was turning pages like this, Old Rose, Old Rose, Old Rose, and it was a great part. Oh, I could taste it halfway through. I knew it was wonderful.
The movie was framed by Old Rose's memory of a romance from her youth.
Titanic was called the Ship of Dreams. And it was. It really was.
Gloria Stewart's role in Titanic capped a movie career that stretched back to the elaborate Busby Berkeley musicals in the 1930s. But in later years, she said her heart belonged to the theater.
I didn't want to play girl reporters, girl detectives, girl lawyers, rich girl, poor girl, those parts. They were not challenging. I had been playing Chekhov and Shakespeare and Pirandello, and, you know, I was very snobbish.
Gloria Stewart died on Sunday at the age of 100. Her daughter says that during her long life, her mother did not believe in illness. She paid no attention to it, and it served her well.
Actor Tony Danza returns to TV this Friday. It's been years since he starred in Taxi and Who's the Boss, but this time around, instead of a sitcom, he is in a reality show called Teach on the A&E Network. He finds himself in front of a 10th grade English class at Philadelphia's largest public high school. Before he was a TV star, Danza actually studied to become a teacher, and as Andy Dennert reports, the desire to teach came first, and then the TV show.
A celebrity teaching a real high school class seems so ridiculous that a veteran teacher confronted Tony Danza right away.
He grabbed me right in the beginning of the year. He's like, really? Are you here to act a teacher? Or are you here to be a teacher because you could make a difference? Which is it? You know, he's really tough.
Students at Northeast High School volunteered to be in Danza's class. But executive producer Leslie Greif says everyone was still concerned about the effects this experiment could have on the kids.
They only had one chance to go through 10th grade English, and that was of paramount concern and importance to Tony.
During the first week of class, students look bored as Danza reads a definition from his notes. They roll their eyes at things he says and openly mock his discomfort.
I have a question.
Yes, please.
Are you nervous?
I'm terrified.
Okay.
The student stifles a smile as she looks down at her desk, and the camera zooms in on Danza's sweat-soaked shirt.
I don't want to embarrass you anything, but like, maybe you should like wear like more undershirt. Or
Yeah, I know.
He sweats a lot. I guess he gets nervous or whatever, and like if you make him raise his arm, it's like all this sweat under there. It's like you could fill up a bucket of water with it.
Cameras weren't at the school for the entire year and didn't seem to have much of an effect. Greif says they even caught students cheating by text message.
They're yawning, they're picking their nose, they're texting. And I'm thinking, do you realize the cameras are watching you text in class? But in my mind, it was like, all right, they're going on. School is school, they're going to do their thing.
Catherine Kellen is a professor of English at Seminole State College, who also taught at an urban high school for 6 years. And she says Danza's experience was a lot easier than what most teachers go through their first year.
Because of having one class that was selected out, because of having a mentor teacher who has an exclusive responsibility to help you, because of having the principal's interest and attention for support.
But she said the series does make teaching look difficult and underappreciated. And that's exactly what Tony Danza hoped for.
I want it to show what's going on in American high school. I want it to say to guys like my age, hey, maybe let me see what I can do. Maybe because there's nothing like it.
There's an even bigger surprise besides Danza's passion for teaching. He's actually good at it. The show's producers paid to air condition the library, and Danza helped the school raise money. But even without all that, Northeast High School principal Linda Carroll says she'd hire him again, because he's a gifted teacher.
Oh, God. Absolutely. No question, because he's funny. He's caring. He understands that before you can teach a thing, you have to connect and build a relationship with a child. And he's willing to do that.
Danza won over his colleagues, too. Their approval meant so much that he chokes up as he flips through the school's yearbook.
Here's my most proudest thing. This is hard to take. This is the English department.
He points to his picture among all the other teachers, and his face widens into a broad smile.
I mean, and so these people agreed that I, you know, deserve to be on this page. This is the greatest honor, I can tell you. I can't even tell you. And I'm in front of a blackboard.
And that's where Tony Danza will be for 7 one-hour episodes. For NPR News, I'm Andy Dennert.
There's a time for love and a time for living. Take a chance and face the wind. An open road and a road that's hidden. A brand new life around the bend. There were times I lost a dream or two.
All Things Considered is a production of NPR News, which is solely responsible for its content. Transcripts for the stories you hear today are available for free tomorrow when you visit the story page on NPR.org. Listeners like you make this and other programs possible. Thanks for supporting public radio. This is NPR.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel.
I'm Miss Bonnie Parker. And this here's Mr. Clyde Barrow. We rob banks.
Director Arthur Penn, whose film Bonnie and Clyde shocked critics, inspired filmmakers, and changed the course of American film, has died. He was 88 years old. In the 1950s and 60s, Penn leapfrogged from Broadway to Hollywood to the then new medium of television. Film critic Bob Mondello offers this appreciation.
No matter what medium he was working in, Arthur Penn always seemed to be something of a miracle worker, so it makes sense that The Miracle Worker was his ticket to fame. He first directed the story on television in 1957, returned to it 2 years later on Broadway, and 3 years after that, on the big screen. A wild, young Helen Keller, blind, deaf, and struggling with her teacher, Annie Sullivan, in a battle of wills that Penn staged as an out-and-out slugfest.
W-A-T-E-R, water. It has a name. W-A-T.
The Miracle Worker won Oscars for Patty Duke and Anne Bancroft, and it established Penn as a successful film director, though his career initially moved in fits and starts. He was dismissed from one project, had another butchered by his producer, and by the time Warren Beatty called him to ask if he'd take over direction of a picture about a pair of bank robbers, he was bitter about the way Hollywood had treated him. Beatty gambled and offered him final cut on the movie, a rare thing at the time, but in this case a smart bet. The result was a gangster flick unlike anything Hollywood had ever seen, an initially funny crime spree that turns mythic, becoming a mix of sex, charisma, and especially violence. Many establishment critics loathed Bonnie and Clyde when it came out, saying it was morally lacking and in terrible taste, but a few young critics embraced it, and they brought young audiences with them. It was the first picture Pauline Kael reviewed for The New Yorker, and she raved, calling it an excitingly American movie. As to the criticism that there was excessive violence in the film, Penn rejected that, as he told NPR's Terry Gross in 1998.
There's gratuitous, mindless violence, and then there is the depiction of how it really is. And I think that we depicted that by not doing it in an ordinary reportorial style. God knows, we've been imitated thousands and thousands of times now by television shows. Every time you see kind of somebody attempting violence, they go into that basic slow motion. Well, in American films, at least, we did it first.
Arthur Penn was born in 1922 to a Russian Jewish couple, a watchmaker and a nurse, who divorced when he was 3. He and his brother Irving Penn, who would later become a famed photographer, moved around a lot, and in a sense, that's the way he lived his career as well, using lulls in television to direct films like Alice's Restaurant and Little Big Man, and using lulls on film to direct on Broadway, where he staged Wait Until Dark, Two for the Seesaw, Toys in the Attic, and the Civil Rights era musical Golden Boy. Though he slowed down at the end of his career, Arthur Penn continued directing well into his 80s, both on TV and on stage, always attracted to stories of social outsiders and the chance to give one more little big man a voice. I'm Bob Mondello.
And here in the U.S., actor Tony Curtis has died at the age of 85. He was in more than 100 films over the course of his career, ranging from hard-edged dramas to classic comedies. His breakout role came in 1958 in The Defiant Ones with Sidney Poitier. The film's about two escaped convicts shackled together. In this clip, they're arguing over which direction they should go.
How long you been in jail? Eight years.
Then how do you know the train's still running?
I don't know.
You don't know? You asking me to go 60 miles with you and you don't even know? What are you inviting me on? A long walk off a short pier? And I'm going to come up with a wet head? Nothing doing. Now, come on.
Tony Curtis received an Oscar nomination for that role. And 1 year later, he starred with Jack Lemmon in a very different movie, also with Marilyn Monroe, the comedy Some Like It Hot. At the end of his long career, Tony Curtis told NPR that he enjoyed being one of Hollywood's elder statesmen.
I'm now giving into some of the joys that I've experienced in my lifetime. You know, I'm a painter. I write poetry. I'm invited to different places to speak on movies, and I just get up and talk to them like I'm talking to you. I don't have to research anything. I am the research.
Curtis joined the Navy as a teenager, and the GI Bill took him through acting school. A talent scout spotted him, and the man who would become one of the best-known actors of his time went off to Hollywood on a contract that paid $75 a week.